This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, filling in for Terry Gross. The Presidential Summit for America's Future concludes today in Philadelphia. It began on Sunday with a rally and a cleanup along an 8-mile stretch of Germantown Avenue, a street which runs through a poor section of the city marked by graffiti, litter-strewn parks, and boarded-up buildings. That's been followed by 2 days of speeches and discussions about how to mobilize the nation to help young people at risk through mentoring programs, healthcare services, safe and effective schools, and the chance to give back through community service. While this star-studded event has gotten most of the spotlight, a counter-convention called the People Summit has been meeting just a few blocks away. Activists from around the country have called for more jobs and more government programs to help the needy. We invited journalist Nicholas Lemon on Fresh Air today to talk about the summit and its goals. He's national correspondent for Atlantic Monthly and the author of The Promised Land, about how the country was changed by the migration of blacks from the South to the North, published in 1991. I asked Lemon about how much he thinks volunteering actually helps the person receiving the services.
There's a lot of social science about what is the effect of various kinds of face-to-face improvement programs on the person who supposedly is being improved. The statistical record of these programs is not as great as the people who are involved with the programs want it to be. Typically what happens is you get some kind of improvement in the person over the short term, and then it kind of falls off over the long term after the program is over. Now, lately, there's one program that has come up with just killer numbers, and that program is Big Brothers Big Sisters, which also happens to be exactly the program that, if I'm right about what General Powell has in mind, the program that's closest to his central conception of what volunteerism is supposed to be.
Big Brothers and Big Sisters is a national program, and it aims to pair an adult with a child or a young adult, a teenager, helping them deal with schoolwork or some of the problems that might be endemic in their neighborhood. And it's a relationship that gets developed over time, someone that this young person can talk to. That's an extraordinary commitment of someone's time and energy to another person, very different from cleaning up trash along the highway or perhaps even spending a day cleaning up a street in Philadelphia, as was done on Sunday at Germantown Avenue, in need of a facelift.
I can speak to this as a former Big Brother myself. I found being a Big Brother very rewarding. The time commitment for me, I would spend usually Saturdays with my little brother, who was a kid who didn't have a father. And so it's a pretty big commitment of pretty much one whole day a week, or at least half of that day. I thought it really did make a difference in the kid's life, and it just seemed to mean a lot to him. Now, I would give two caveats based on my own experience. One is, after I had been doing it a certain amount of time, I got a new job that required moving to a different city, and I've moved away. I later heard from the Big Brothers Big Sisters office in the town that the kid's mother and the kid himself were quite upset that I had moved away, so upset that they almost felt that the downside of the relationship was greater than the upside. Second thing is, now that I have children of my own, I don't have time to do it anymore. I just wouldn't be able to. So Big Brothers require, and Big Sisters also mostly require, people who have hit adulthood but don't have enough family responsibilities to preclude doing it. So it's a pretty narrow band of humanity that can be Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
If I can enlarge this discussion slightly, because Big Brothers Big Sisters is an example of a program that has some track record and looks like it's doing a fairly good job. But again, I think it's only 100,000 children across the country are actually part of the Big Brother Big Sister program. Looking at volunteer work, at charity work, what do you think they do well, and what do you think they really cannot be asked to do?
Let me answer the second part of that first. Anything that the society wants to offer as a kind of guarantee of citizenship, almost by definition, if it's put in the hands of volunteers, it isn't being guaranteed.
Because volunteers move, programs change, there's a kind of loss of consistency.
Well, voluntarism is voluntary. I mean,
right,
I hate to sound tautological, but I'll give you an example, which would be Medicare and Medicaid when they were created in 1965. Before Medicare and Medicaid, what those programs do was done through volunteerism. In other words, hospitals customarily treated and doctors treated poor people and elderly people who couldn't pay free of charge, or the families pitched in. The reason we passed those programs and the reason those programs are so incredibly popular is people just don't trust volunteerism to take care of something that important. The same would go for public education through 12th grade. We as a society have made a decision that we're going to provide that to every kid as a right of citizenship. So, you know, anything you want to have absolutely guaranteed cannot be voluntary because, you know, by definition, it won't be guaranteed to everybody who needs it. It'll only go to some people who need it, maybe even most, but not all.
When you look at some of the programs, and perhaps looking at programs aimed at the elderly is a good example, because we've decided as a society that people are entitled to a form of health insurance when they get old and some kind of form of social security so they won't die in poverty. Looking to those programs as successful programs, where does the anti-big government sentiment come from? And we hear that more and more.
Well, the answer to that, I'm afraid, is extremely simple, mostly extremely simple. I'll go into it a little more. The easy, quick answer to your question is people don't like paying taxes. On the whole, people like government, I believe. On the whole, pretty much they like government, but they don't like to pay for government. And so people develop a kind of mental construct where there is this thing called quote-unquote big government that's doing all sorts of stuff that I would not be willing to pay taxes for. Actually, and this has been increasingly true in over the last 20 years, government, the things government does are exactly the things that are very popular and people want it to do, such as national defense, Social Security, and Medicare. You know, people just don't like paying taxes, and they don't want to believe that the substantial amount of money they pay in taxes actually goes to something that is useful or necessary. They would much rather believe that it's all wasted, because that kind of justifies the resistance to taxes.
Let me jump in here, though, because looking at some of the great society programs and other social programs that have been established over the last 50 years or so, and look at the fact that in many ways they promise to fix problems which they have not yet done. There are big bureaucracies that have been established around trying to deal with social problems. And the feeling, I think, from critics is that there's a kind of poverty industry that has grown up that is much a part of the problem of poverty as poverty itself.
I would like to forcefully disagree with that argument. I just think that argument is almost completely untrue, and let me explain why. First of all, the Great Society, which is an umbrella term for basically everything Lyndon Johnson did domestically, covers a huge amount of ground. Conservative critics will come up with a very big number attached to the Great Society, which is, you know, a little tendentious, but I won't go into that. But always keep in mind that by a huge, huge, huge margin, the biggest program of the Great Society is one thing, and that's Medicare. Everything else it did is dwarfed by Medicare, and Medicare with incredible, I mean, you can argue with a lot of things about Medicare. The costs are out of control, but it with incredible efficiency wiped out in one generation the problem it was aimed at wiping out, which is medically underserved elderly people. That is just not a problem anymore for our society, and it was a huge problem before. The second biggest item in numbers in the Great Society was various programs pumping federal money into higher education. That, again, nobody argues with. Everybody likes those programs, and they're widely taken advantage of, and we now have the country that sends many, many more people to higher education than any other country in the world. Again, that's viewed as a success. A small subset of the great society, very small, is the collection of programs that are called the War on Poverty. Again, numerically, it's almost an insignificantly small part of the Great Society, all of Lyndon Johnson's programs. So don't be misled by the thought that we spent billions and billions and hundreds of billions of dollars to wage the war on poverty. We didn't. We spent hundreds of billions of dollars to get more people to college and to bring medical care to the elderly and poor. We did not spend untold billions on the war on poverty. Also, Johnson stipulated that the war on poverty could not give any cash grants to poor people. So the war on poverty is completely separate from welfare, and the war on poverty never sent a check of just cash money to any poor person. That's another big misconception.
Nicholas Lemon is national correspondent for Atlantic Monthly. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Nicholas Lemon is our guest, and we're talking about the Volunteer Summit and its goals. If there were either greatly diminished federal funds or almost no federal funds that were going to social programs, would charities be able to do the work that they want to do in the inner city?
You see, most of what people think of as federal social programs, I mean, most of what are federal social programs are actually grants to charities in the inner cities. That's what is not widely understood here. So most charities, rather than being freed by an abolition of federal programs, would actually be bankrupt. And I'll give you an example from my own life.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm right now the board president of a daycare center that serves we serve a mix of kind of half poor and half middle class kids. It's totally the board is totally made up of volunteers, and my work there is completely as a volunteer. Now, our center, which is a private nonprofit, again supervised by volunteers, and we put in a lot of time on this. We actively seek and used to get a lot of federal funds. We used to get a lot of money from a federal social program called Title 20, which is you know, falls under the umbrella of those bad federal social programs. And all it is a grant to a poor family, particularly a welfare family where the mother wants to leave welfare and go off to work, to put the child in a good daycare center. Our Title 20 funds in our center have been cut just horribly in the last few years.
How much do you get in Title 20 funds, you think?
We're now down to basically zero. We have 40 kids in the center. We had 10 kids on Title 20 last year. We have zero kids right now on Title 20. And so it just means that we can't serve as many poor children in our center. We have made up some of the gap through fundraising, but, you know, you can't make up all of the gap. So it's you hear the national debate on this, and it's like watching a kind of topsy-turvy world where according to the debate, if the government would stop its intrusive social programs, then that would free the voluntary sector to deliver the same services better. Well, you know, we're the voluntary sector, and we're able to deliver those services because government pays us to do it. And if government social programs are shut down, that means we can't do it anymore because they took our money away.
Well, let me ask you about how you see foundations, which give out millions of dollars every year to charitable organizations. What role you think they play? And if the idea is to sort of redraw the balance between government and the people, do you see them picking up the slack?
The role that foundations traditionally play, now, let me just define the term a little for listeners who aren't familiar. A foundation generally refers to an organization that is sitting on a big pot of money that some rich person left them, and they give out that money as they see fit, but they aren't actively trying to fundraise for anything.
Right.
And they usually aren't operating programs. They're usually giving money to people who operate programs. Most of the big foundations, what they really try to do is be a kind of leading edge of social change and to create experimental models that they hope government will then follow. I mean, we were talking a minute ago about the war on poverty. The war on poverty was really all done before it got started by the Ford Foundation, which is the biggest private foundation in the country. Remember about foundations that, although they're certainly the good guys and all that, they're probably the most unaccountable institutions in the entire society. They're responsible to absolutely no one. They have no voters. They have no contributors. They have no outside board of directors very often. They have no customers who could leave them if they don't provide good services. They can do whatever they want. And traditionally, foundations have taken that freedom to do whatever you want. They can screw up if they want to. They can do unpopular things if you want to. They take that freedom. They experiment with things. They find the things that work. And then they are very closely connected with government. And they essentially go to government and say, okay, this of our experiments really works, and you guys should pick it up. And that often has happened. Almost all, I would venture to say, government domestic programs started somewhere back when as a foundation experimental program.
There's been a lot of criticism of the summit that it really isn't answering or addressing some of the more critical issues such as jobs. What do you think is going to bring jobs back to the inner cities or back to the people that really need them if they're going to get off of welfare, get out of poverty?
Well, I would conceive of the problem as not one of how do we bring jobs back to the poorest neighborhoods in America, but instead one of how do we get jobs for the people who live in the poorest neighborhoods in America. Remember that often these neighborhoods are in the middle of cities, and you know you can usually get from North Philadelphia to downtown Philadelphia if there are jobs there. I think it doesn't help that much to think that the only way to solve the problem is to get businesses to locate physically in these poor neighborhoods. Instead, it's to get people who grow up in these neighborhoods trained for the job market as it is today and then placed in jobs.
How do you think the American people can be either sold on the idea or perhaps even educated about what it is that the federal government really does? Because, again, I think you're up against a profound skepticism about the function of what federal government is.
I agree that it's a big job. I think it actually has begun to turn around at least a little bit, but I agree that it's a big job. Let me suggest something that comes to mind because of the main organizer of the Volunteer Summit. When Colin Powell was a general, there was a military doctrine associated with him called the Powell Doctrine, and what that said was roughly as follows. Powell felt that in the American people unfairly blamed Vietnam on the military, and therefore they wouldn't support anything about the military or anything that the military wanted to do because of this mistrust. Mm-hmm. So he felt that what you had to do first was rebuild the bond of trust between the public and the military, and only after you had done that could you rebuild the military itself. And so he had a strategy that's been much criticized, but it actually worked as he conceived of it, which was to take on these kind of easy wins militarily and show the military performing extremely well, such as in the Gulf War, quickly, overwhelming force, clear mission. And then once you did that, it would turn around the public attitudes toward the military. I would propose that we do a Powell Doctrine on domestic government, and particularly the part aimed at poverty. The opposite of the Powell Doctrine is what Johnson did when he declared war on poverty, which is to take on an enormous mission that no head of state has ever solved in the history of the world, and at least raise the expectation of doing it quickly. What I think would help a lot is to define two or three very specific things and say, here's a problem, government is going to take this problem on. It's going to apply overwhelming force, and there's going to be a very clear, specific mission, and we're going to produce a win. And then the public will see that, and that'll begin to turn around the public perception of government.
And what do you think would produce a win? What would be a program that you could almost guarantee success on?
Well, the one that pops into mind right now is crime control, because local police forces, I mean, the problem with it is that crime control is a local function and not a national function, although, again, police forces are a local organization that get a lot of money from the federal government. But that's an area where the reductions have been so dramatic in the last few years, in big cities at least. So that would be an example where you can have a win. Housing is another example where I think you can have a win. There's just been a lot of experience built up over the last generation, particularly by local community development corporations, which again are substantially funded by the federal government. So what I would do in the domestic Powell doctrine is find the things where there's a body of experience, target those as modest but achievable and important goals, instead of saying in some big vague way, we are going to do XYZ thing that is actually very hard to do, such as eliminate poverty or create a job base in the ghetto.
Well, Nicholas Lemon, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Nicholas Lemon is national correspondent for Atlantic Monthly and author of The Promised Land. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.